Have you heard the statement, Jesus talks more about money than he does hell? Has anybody ever heard that? Anybody ever heard that statement? I've heard that so many times. And so I just want to let you know, there's a lot of people who do believe that Jesus talks more about money than he does hell. And when you actually investigate the times that Jesus talks about money, it's interesting. He's not talking about money per se. He's using money as an illustration for something else. So he's not really talking about money. He's talking about the kingdom of God. And he uses the word money. And I was thinking, if somebody just did that and said, how many times did he use a particular word? So he talked about that thing more than anything else. It would really probably be more Jesus gave us gardening techniques more than he talked about anything else. But we know that's not the case. We know that Jesus talked about other things. He talked about the coming of the kingdom. This, however, does not mean that the Bible has forgotten us when it comes to how we handle our money and how we're stewards financially. This morning, we're going to be talking about how to have financial freedom from debt and loans. But I thought it was really important for us to first start and talk about how a Christian should view money and resources, right? So start from a biblical viewpoint of how we're supposed to be good stewards of the things God's given us, so that when we then go into Proverbs 6 and we start talking about this concept of cosigns and loans and all of this, we understand the framework and we go, yeah, no, that makes total sense why it would be foolish to do some of these things and why we need to be incredibly careful. This is not meant to be, by any stretch, to be a financial freedom seminar, but rather just a quick basic principles, first principles of how we understand money, how we understand how we as Christians are supposed to use it to glorify God. So I just have seven principles first of stewardship. How we are to use our resources and manage our resources. First of all, the word economy, interestingly enough, comes from the Greek word that we normally translate steward, right? And so that's really what economy is. Economy is how we manage money, resources, and the transferring of resources. But the first thing that we need to remember is that even though the Bible does talk about our stewardship, the Bible itself is not a comprehensive textbook on economics. It gives us principles, and we're to live by those principles. It may give us accounts of how people use money in the past, not as setting down a normative rule, but just describing how people have done it, right? So there are principles, and these principles are good, and they're healthy, but they're always aimed at glorifying God. We as Christians are not in the business of just making money for the sake of making money. We are in the business of glorifying God and using our resources that he's given us to honor and glorify him. So that's number one. Number two, God created humans as stewards. We were created with stewardship in mind. Go with me to Genesis 1. Genesis 1, and I'm just going to start in verse 26. And notice what it says. It says, then God said, let us make man in our image. This is a really important phrase, by the way, if I'm allowed to rabbit trail just for a moment. This is an incredibly important phrase on how we understand other human beings. Every single person is made, and they bear the image of God. They have intrinsic value, not because I think they have value, but because God created them, and he made them distinct from all other creatures. And in trying to think of what does it mean that a human being is made in the image of God, there's been a lot of people that tried to describe this image of God. And I really think that what it means is, as far as a creature can go, we are the most like God that a creature can be. That's what it means to be made in the image of God. So God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. By the way, I don't see a difference here between the word image and likeness. Some people do. Some people try to say that there's a difference between image and likeness. I don't see that. It says, notice, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So notice that man is created in the image of God, and female or woman is made in the image of God as well. Okay? So it's not as if man's made in the image of God and then women are somehow not human or they're humanish. That is not the sense. Both are created in the image of God. Okay? And notice what God says to them. God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves on the earth." So notice what he says to them. First, he gives these three commands. Be fruitful, multiply, and fill. To be fruitful, to multiply, and fill is all procreation. It's really hard to understand this as anything else other than procreation. Okay? And so it's part of the human imperative to procreate. This is part of the stewardship that God's given us. And notice that it's to fill the earth. And why should we fill the earth? Because of the next ones, to subdue it and to have dominion over it or rule over it. That first word for subdue really means to make as one's slave. So think of this. We are to take these resources that God has given us and make it into our slaves. Not just for our own ends, right? For our own gratification, but it's to glorify him. He's given us these things that we then use and make and master and manage it in a way that glorifies God, that we're able to survive and live, and he provides through these means, okay? So notice that stewardship, right? We're to rule, we're to subdue, we're to make it our slave, right? And notice that's supposed to be the fish, it's supposed to be the birds. Later on, we're going to see that it's supposed to be the plants, it's supposed to be over all the beasts. And notice what he says, verse 29. Then God said, "Behold, I have given you." Now, this is an important part of understanding stewardship. I have given you. This means that God already owns everything. He owns it. It's his. Everything that is here, he owns. He lends it to us for a time to manage it. And when we are gone, he will then lend it to someone else, and they will manage the resources. Okay? So in understanding my stewardship, I understand this thing is not mine, but only for a moment. It is given to me by God, and I am to manage it in the time that he's given it to me. Okay? Principle number three. We'll see this more next week. But I think a third principle of stewardship is to be productive. We are not to be lazy. And if we are a good steward, we are going to work hard and we're going to be productive. Number four, I think this is also an important one. We see this from the book of Ecclesiastes. I'm not going to go through the whole book of Ecclesiastes. But we are to enjoy the fruits of our labor. It is okay to have things. It is okay to have wealth, okay? God gives us things, and we are to enjoy those things. He gives them as gifts. It's okay. To enjoy a steak is okay. To have a new car, it's okay. That in itself is not sinful. It becomes sinful when that is the sole purpose of your existence, right? When you strive so hard after those things, and you think that only your satisfaction can be found in those things, or you do it in a greedy way, or you try to get it outside of God's timing and outside of God's will, that's when it becomes sinful. But let me say the opposite. Let's say you don't have a lot of things. That does not mean that, one, you are a bad steward. That doesn't necessarily mean it. There's a difference between being broke and being sinful because you spend all your money on frivolous things. Those are two complete different things, right? So just because you don't have anything doesn't mean that you're not a good steward, and it doesn't mean that you're living in sin. So if you have a lot, you're not living in sin, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're a good steward. And if you have nothing, that doesn't mean you're living in sin. What you have is what's given to you, and you are to be a good steward of what God gives to you. Okay? If you enjoy something from time to time, that is fine. That is a gift from God that is meant to be enjoyed. And praise the Lord. Right? This past week, I had alligator and frog legs. And I praised the Lord until I started saying ribbit. No, I'm joking. I didn't do that. I also had okra, too, deep-fried okra and greens. I pretty much, it was anything that was in a swamp, they put on my plate. It was great. It was, I actually really enjoyed it. That stuff is okay to enjoy, all right? Next principle of stewardship. There are some who are better, more disciplined. They're a better steward than others. But ultimately, that wealth that they have and the things that they manage is from the Lord. So some can be better, some can be worse. But I just want to point this out. Go with me to Deuteronomy 18. I'm sorry, Deuteronomy 8:18. So here God is reminding through Moses. Deuteronomy has several sermons from Moses. And each of these sermons are kind of like a retelling of the law and telling them what they're supposed to do when they go into the promised land, right? So this is Moses' last words to the people going into the promised land. And one of the things that he wanted them to remember was this. In verse 18, "You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you power to make wealth." He's giving you power to make wealth. So some people are better stewards, but ultimately the wealth that I have and the things that I have are given to me from God. The actual power and business acumen that comes with making wealth, that is something that the Lord gives me as well. He gives me that intellect to be able to do that. So ultimately we could say that wealth is from the Lord, even though there are some who are better stewards of the resources than others. I would also say this, sixthly, if God gives a particular person something for a particular time, it is not okay for me to then go try to take that thing from them and say, this thing that God has given to you for you to be a steward, now I, based off of my own decision and off of what I desire that thing, I now am going to be the steward of this thing and go and take that thing and change stewardship of that one property to another. This is namely, thou shalt not steal, right? This is what makes theft so wrong. God has given particular things to particular people at particular time. When I steal it, I am essentially acting like God saying, you are no longer steward of this thing. I am now steward of this thing outside of God's timing and his will. I'm now the arbitrator of who has what and when. That's what makes theft so wrong. It's not just you took what I have. It's God gave this to you in order for you to manage. Someone else takes that for them to manage. And then lastly, just want to say this again. Man is sinful. Man has bad attitudes. Money, a $10 bill, for example, is not sinful. If I was to put a $10 bill on that table, it would not sin because it itself is a piece of paper. What it stands for, right, is value by which we trade one set of goods for another. It is immoral. It has no morality. How I acquire that and how I use that, that determines good or bad. It is not the money that is evil. It is the intent of getting money and spending money. So when we consider those things, and now we, as we move into Proverbs 6, as we think about cosigns and loans, I want you to think of this stewardship. Okay, God has given us money. He's given us resources by which we're to be good stewards. And so if I am putting myself in a situation where I am not managing my resources properly, and now I have to use my resources not to serve and glorify God and help my family, now I have to go use my resources for another thing, serve another master, serve my neighbor's needs instead of the Lord's needs, now you understand why this is such a big issue when it comes to fearing the Lord. Because in a sense, sometimes we can place ourselves in a situation, we can put ourselves in debt where we are not serving the Lord, but we're serving our neighbor, and we are enslaved by that. And that is not a good use of our time and of our resources. I would also say this, some who are probably thinking of, okay, the book of Proverbs, we just got done chapter 5 talking about marriage and physical intimacy. Now we're talking about loans. What's the logic here? How did Solomon, a wise man, get from one to another? You could argue those are the two most opposite things in the world, right? But let me just say this. When I look at these two phrases, these two sections, I would categorize it by this. Solomon is really saying, if you fear God, then you are a good steward of your heart and of your resources, and you will wisely choose your partners. In chapter 5, you're choosing your marital partners, your sexual partners, namely your wife, right? That's it, your wife, no one else. In this next chapter, it's dealing with your business partners. If I fear the Lord, I'm going to be a good steward of the things he's given me, and I'm going to wisely enter into some of these things. So allow me to read Proverbs 6, 1 through 5, and then we'll kind of tear this apart. Notice what he says in verse 1. My son, if you have become surety for your neighbors, have given a pledge for a stranger, if you have been snared with the words of your mouth, if you have been caught with the words of your mouth, do this then, my son, deliver yourself. Since you have come into the hand of your neighbor, go, humble yourself. Importune your neighbor. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand, and like a bird from the hand of a fowler. So notice here, in the first two verses, he talks about this circumstance of if you get caught in a contract, if you get caught in a co-signing a loan, right? If you get caught in one of these things. So he's kind of giving a circumstance. And then the next part is the advice of what you should do if you get caught in the circumstance. So we could essentially say the first part is dealing with be careful. Be really, really careful. The second part would be the advice of if you get caught. If you get caught, by the way, we all get caught, right? We all get caught in these things. So if you get caught, what are the things that we're supposed to do? So notice, let's just take apart the first verse, right? Be careful. He says, my son, if you have become surety for your neighbor. Now this idea for surety is kind of like the sense of collateral. But in the ancient world, somebody could give somebody a loan, and you would put yourself up as collateral. Meaning, if this person does not pay, then I will sell myself into indentured servitude to you. Right? You could do that. You could put yourself up for collateral. In fact, you could even say, give me this loan, and then I'll put myself up as collateral. But I suppose, just like in our own day, anytime a bank makes you have somebody co-sign, that probably means that the bank doesn't think you can pay back the loan. Therefore, whenever you have a co-signer, even in the ancient world, they go, yeah, I don't believe you're going to pay back this loan. And I'm not 100% sure I can get anything back. So I'm going to have something of value that I can at least recoup my money. And he says, look, son, if there is a situation in which somehow you and your neighbor come up with a scheme, and you co-sign and you put yourself up as the collateral, however that may happen, be careful. Don't be careful when you do this, right? And then notice the next part. And have given a pledge for a stranger. This idea for a pledge is like entering into a contract. It has the idea of like a business transaction. Now, I don't think that Solomon here is saying that it's wrong to give loans. I don't think he's saying it's wrong to co-sign. In fact, we know that the Old Testament allowed for loans. So, for example, in Exodus 22, it says this, if you lend money to my people, to the poor among you, you shall not deal with them as a creditor. You shall not exact interest from them. Deuteronomy 23 says the same thing. In fact, even says, if your brother falls on hard times and you give them a loan, you shall not take an interest from them. And if you feed them while they're staying in your house, don't get profit from that. Just charge the price of food. Don't take advantage of people in their worst times. If you loan it to them, then that's what you get back, right? Interestingly enough, if you're not Jewish, then they could charge you interest. I don't know what that means other than that's what you're allowed to do. It is interesting as watching the life of Israel and as Israel kind of through the life of the lens of the prophets as they grow up, as it were. You know, the first thing that they started to break was this law. They started to charge interest. It's also interesting, too, that the law also has protection for the creditor, but it also has protection against the person who's borrowing. So let's say that somebody needs some money, and the person says, okay, well, I at least need some collateral. I need some collateral. They couldn't take the things that were needed to live and the things that were needed for their livelihood. But there was a guarantee at the end of every 7 years, you would get back the property that you had. And after 70 years, you would definitely get back your land. So there was always this checks and balances, right? The borrower was protected and the creditor was protected, right? It is also interesting, too, when I think about this idea of loans and debt. I think of the Apostle Paul himself. There is an occasion where he took on someone else's debt. Didn't co-sign with them, just said, I'll take on the debt. Go with me to Philemon. This is an interesting text. Right, you remember the story. Paul's in prison. A slave runs away by the name of Onesimus. Onesimus meets Paul. Paul shares the gospel with him because what else would the Apostle Paul do, right? He would share the gospel with whoever he had opportunity with. And I imagine the Apostle Paul, every time he saw a new prisoner, goes, next guy I'm going to talk to about the gospel, right? So he talks to Onesimus. Onesimus becomes a believer. Finds out that Onesimus was owned by another believer by the name of Philemon. So what happens is Paul sends Onesimus back to Philemon with this letter. And notice what he says in verse 18. He says, but if he, Onesimus, has wronged you in any way or owes you anything, charge that to my account. So here's a brother that if he owes anything, the Apostle Paul just says, I'll take on the debt. If he owes you anything, I'll pay it. Then notice the next verse. I think this is also interesting. I, Paul, am writing this with my own hand. I will repay it, not to mention to you that you owe to me even your own self as well, right? Like, remember, Philemon, you owe me a lot of stuff. But if this guy owes you some stuff, I'll pay it. But remember, I forgave a debt too, right? So the question is, how does a Christian then think of this passage in Proverbs 6? For me, this is how I would say it. Be very careful. There are times, different situations require different solutions. I understand that. There's a lot of nuanced things. I'm not saying you're sinning if you loan out money. I'm not saying you're sinning if you co-sign something. Just be careful. Right? I think that would be right. Be discerning and also be compassionate. And sometimes maybe the solution is I'll just give you money, not even as a loan. Because I'll be honest, I've met a lot of families who they loan money to each other and they hate each other now. Over small amounts that you would have said, you should have just gave it to them. Don't even charge them. But I understand that each situation is different and each situation may require some nuanced thing. The advice I think is here, be careful. Be careful how we move forward, right? Because I'll be honest with you, there's plenty of times I've made pledges with strangers, and you go, what? Yeah, we all have cell phones. We signed contracts with people that we've never even met before. So we all sign contracts, right? So just be careful, right? Because it's possible that we could sign a contract, not read it right, and get caught. So just be careful. I think that's really what the principle is here. Be careful. It's not, you're not sinning if you loan money, you're not sinning if you co-sign, but be very careful. Because notice what happens, verse 2. If you've been snared with the words of your mouth, meaning when you're striking up a deal, you say something, you may be caught to have to carry that thing out. Or let's say that you say, yeah, I'm going to co-sign a loan with somebody. Guess what? That person doesn't pay. Guess who gets caught with all of that money or all that payment? You do. Or the notice the next part, or have been caught with the words of your mouth. Almost as if you've kind of set a snare for yourself to trick yourself. I remember when I was going to Africa the first time, Chris and I were buying a cell phone so that I could call her when I was in Africa. I talked to one of the reps with a major cell phone provider. I'm not going to say who it is because I'm still with them and they might hear it and might charge me more money. But we talked to them, and I said, if I go overseas and I make a call, will I be charged international fees? And they said, no. And I said, well, then sign me up. So I signed the contract. When I got back, we got this monster bill because I called my wife thinking that there was no international fees. There were international fees on top of international fees on top of international fees. So when I called the company, I explained to them my plight, and they said, sorry. And I said, but your person lied to me. And they said, our rep may have misrepresented it, but you signed the contract. And it was clearly stated in the contract. You even signed a statement that you read the contract. You are therefore responsible for every single cent. But out of the goodness of our heart, we will waive $50. Which, in a sense, they did not have to do. Which I would say was a very nice thing for them to do. And they were right. I should have read the contract. Right? So this stuff happens all the time. Right? I mean, we probably all have stories of where we signed a contract and we realized there was a weird clause and we got caught, okay? So what happens in that situation, right? You're careful, but you get caught. Notice the advice in verse 3. Do this then, my son. Right? Because remember, we're stewards. God has given us resources to manage. So we have to manage this in a way that glorifies Christ, that doesn't ruin our testimony, that allows us to actually share the gospel, right? We don't want to become so bad with our money and so bad in our dealings with contracts that when we say, guess what, Jesus loves you and can change your life, they go, yeah, right. You still owe me millions of dollars, right? We don't want that to happen. We want to have a good testimony. And we want to use what God has given us for his glory, right? Even these resources are for his glory. So this is much more than just some financial principle. This is a theological issue as well. So do this, right? Deliver yourself. And he says, since you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Think of this. You are in the palm of the hand of the guy you owe money to, right? You're in the palm of the hand with the person who you've co-signed with. You are stuck. You are in slavery. So go do this. And he gives four pieces of advice here. Brilliant pieces of advice. The first piece of advice is go. Go. Do not be passive when you are in debt, right? Do not be passive. You need to be active. You need to go, and you need to work hard. You should not sit on your hands. The next piece of advice, humble yourself. This requires humility. Not only humility in yourself, right, of just being humble people, and wanting to glorify God, but it would also be in the sense of, look, this is not really a time for arrogance and saying, I will never do that to pay off this debt. When you are in this situation, you should say, I'm going to do everything possible to get out of this, right? If I'm caught in debt, if I'm caught in this loan, this is a bad situation, I'm going to do everything humanly possible to get out of this, okay? I think that would be the sense. I remember even myself as a young man when I was having trouble paying some of my own bills. I went to my dad and I said, yeah, I'm looking for a job. And he said, well, what? There's this job. And I said, well, I don't want to do that job. And he said, wait a minute. What do you mean you're not going to do that job? You have bills to be paid. You can't be picky how you get money. You have to make money because you have to pay those bills. Grow up. That's the kind of sense here. There really shouldn't be anything below us to say, we got to go do this, right? We got to make sure that we get out of this because we need to be stewards of our own resources. If I'm still caught in this debt, in this weird loan, in this bad contract, I'm not being the right kind of steward. I'm now being the slave of my other master. And then there's this sense, notice this next one, where I need to go and I need to be very loving, right? I need to inopportune my neighbor, and I need to be very loving, I need to be very humble, I need to be very strong, and I need to be very persistent. I think that's what this word means. Being loving, humble, strong, and persistent. You are going to that person. So if you co-sign and that person is not paying, you are very loving, you are very humble, you are very strong, and you are very persistent. That you are going to them saying, please pay right now. Please pay right now. Please pay right now. If you're in a bad contract, you need to make sure that you are being, you're being very forceful. You're asking if you can get out of it, and you're trying to get out of this by paying off your debt. And then notice the next piece of advice. Give no sleep to your eyes and no slumber to your eyelids. The idea is that you're working hard, right? You are doing all that you can do to get out of this trap. You're doing everything you possibly can. Because let's be honest, in the ancient world, going into debt was far worse than it is today. Our culture kind of lives off of debt. It's easy for somebody to live for years on debt and kind of compound that debt. In the ancient world, they didn't play around. You owed them money, you became their slave. This was a serious thing. You did not want to do that, right? So the advice is you need to make sure that you're paying those bills and getting out of debt, right? And then notice what he says in verse 5. He kind of sandwiches this. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand. Now, if any of you have ever hunted after deer or elk, you know when they are spooked, they flee as fast as they can, right? And they run hard. They do everything they possibly can to get away from you. That is how a person should react when you're in a bad contract, right? And you're in debt. You need to act like a deer that's being hunted by a hunter and doing everything you possibly can to get out of it. Or like a bird from the hand of a fowler, right? Also, I'm a turkey hunter. Guess what? Those things don't sit around saying, hey, you know what would be kind of cool? I'd love to be shot and eaten today. Just come and catch me. I'll tell you where I'm going to be. No, these things run away. They run for their lives because they understand the serious nature of what's happening. And what he's asking his son is be careful. He's not forbidding a loan. He's not forbidding co-signing. But what he's saying is if you are in debt where you possibly could be a slave, you're possibly not being a steward of your own resources. You need to get out of that as soon as possible. This past week, like I said, I went to Florida. Really loved the company of my friends. Really, really loved it. I told them that they should move here and be friends with all of us here and that they should leave that purgatory of a place of training for Hades. I told them that there's too much sun, there's too many bugs, and yes, the sun was cooking me for the bugs to eat me. But one of the things that I did was I went, and he's running a Christian conference center, and it's not doing so hot with COVID, and his business is not doing so hot. So kind of some of the things that we did, we went down and we kind of volunteered some time to help out with some stuff. And I did some office work for him, which was a joke, but I did some office work for him. And while I was there, they had this interesting thing happen. They're having a women's conference, or they were having a women's conference. And they were talking about contracts, right? And they were talking about money. And what they realized that not enough people have signed up for this women's conference. And they still had a long enough date before they could cancel their speaker where they didn't have to pay the speaker. And so they were debating, do we stay a little bit longer? Do we keep the conference on a little bit longer so that we might get more people? Or do we just kibosh it now? And the reason that they canceled it was, even if no one signs up from this date on, we cannot afford the speaker. Even if we get same numbers that we had pre-COVID, it is a difficult proposition at this point to pay the speaker. The camp will not survive. So what they decided to do was that clause was get out of that, which would kill them, which I thought was an amazing principle following this principle. They were stewards of something that God gave them. They reasoned, if we still go through with this, we're going to have to pay out large sums of money to somebody that might not even do this thing, but because we signed a contract, we'd be obligated to pay them. We have a clause where we do not have to pay them, so we're not going to. I thought it was an incredible an incredible thing. As I'm studying Proverbs 6, I'm sitting in the office, I'm listening to these people talk about it. I thought, what an amazing thing. What an amazing thing. Now, some of us, we don't have to deal with things like that. But let me just leave you with a couple principles, a couple things to kind of put in your hat when we're dealing with this issue of being a good steward. Some three pieces of advice. First, we need to realize that we should be good stewards. This is an important thing. We need to start viewing ourselves as stewards. The things I have are given to me by God. They're not mine. They're given to me to manage. I will have to, when I die, I will by nature give it up, and God will then give it to another person, these resources. My job as a steward is to manage the things he's given me in the way that he desires for them to be managed. I don't have the right to determine how I manage someone else's stuff. He's the one that's told me how I should manage these things. So we need to start seeing ourselves as stewards of things that God has given us. I would also say this, that part of being a good steward, especially with God, is using our money in a way that's smart and that honors him. And I will be honest, God has given us many resources, maybe might not be money, maybe time or things or whatever. I would often say that the most important thing that you should be investing in is your own spiritual life. And you should be spending a lot of time, a lot of resources to grow your spiritual life and that of your family. That should be the primary focus, right? Of course, we need to provide for them physically, but the spiritual life of the believer is the most important. I would also say this too, that investing your money in a local church and your local body of brothers and sisters here is also a really important thing. And there are other ministries, right? There are other ministries. We heard about CEF this morning. There's ministries on the wall that we have, right? Of people that are doing the Lord's work, and sometimes they need resources. Ministry takes resources. And sometimes the Lord uses us and the resources we have to help further the gospel and glorify God, right, through the giving of those resources. So invest wisely. Second piece of advice I'd give you is be careful who you partner with in a business relationship or in a loan. I'm not going to say it's evil to do that. I'm not going to say it's evil to co-sign. I understand different situations require different nuanced approaches. Just be careful and realize that sometimes a financial situation can be solved multiple ways. There's not just one way to solve a financial situation. There's multiple things. Sometimes the advice may be, let me just give you the money. Don't have to pay me back. Sometimes, let me help you find a job so you can pay it back. Maybe sometimes it is, hey, yeah, I'll give you a loan. But we must be careful as brothers and sisters not to make a profit off of each other. Now, I don't think we really struggle with that, but let's be honest. Is it possible? Could we foresee a situation where we do try to make a profit off of each other on the misfortune of another person? Yeah, that happens all the time, right? It's recorded. So we got to be careful. That's it. That's an easy temptation, right? And then lastly, I would say if you are caught in a situation, in a bad contract, or you're caught in a bad co-signing thing, or you're in debt, you need to get out of that vicious circle. You need to. I'm going to be honest. God has given you resources to manage. Being in debt is not a good management of those resources. Now, I am not a financial planning expert. So there are other men here that I would point you to and say, go talk to them. They know what they're doing with their money. But let me just give you a couple pieces of advice just as a way of just kind of get your house in order. You need to have a budget, right? If you're a good steward, you need to manage your money. And a good budget is a good way to manage it. I would also say this too. If you're in huge debt, the best thing to do is to pay the monthly minimums on all of that debt, but try to get the smallest one first. Then all that money that you were paying for the smallest one, then roll it over into the next smallest one, and the next smallest one, and the next smallest one. That way, you're then paying off all of your debts, and you pay the principal, not the interest, right? How many of us have been caught in that trap? I've been caught in that trap, where you're paying the interest. All you're doing is paying the interest, paying the interest, paying the interest. You go, I paid 500 times more for this than I did the beef jerky that I paid for in the convenience store. What's going on? That's the problem. So you got to pay the principal, right? Not the interest. We got to be good stewards. We got to be careful. We got to remember that everything that God's given us is for His glory. That's what we're striving for. We're striving to glorify Him. We're striving to have a good testimony. This is one of those areas that we can have a good testimony. And if you fear the Lord, you are going to be a good steward of your heart and of your resources, which means you are going to properly pick and align yourself with the right partners, right? With your husband and your wife sexually, that way. And with your business partners and who you sign deals with and contracts with. So have compassion and be concerning. May the Lord help us in all that we've heard today. Let's go ahead and let's pray.